You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manicero, and this is the show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, type in Old Dogs, spelled D-A-W-G-S, find our podcast, and subscribe. Well, we have two guests today for you, and this is something we don't do often, and hopefully, technically, it'll work out really well. But one of them is actually an alumni, and that person is Jay Scott. And Jay has been in previous episodes, 2018, I think it was the first one, Real Estate Investing Success Through Great Timing and Effective Deal Analysis, and in April 1st, 2019, Recession Proof Real Estate Investing, which is pretty relevant today. Well, just to give you a little background on Jay, for those of you that may not have listened to those episodes, Jay is an accomplished entrepreneur, investor, best-selling author, and respected advisor. He has bought, built, rehabbed, sold, syndicated, and held over $70 million in residential property, and currently owns several hundred units as a managing partner at Bar Down Investments. His diverse experience and unmatched knowledge of economic cycles and market trends makes his coaching valuable to the success of aspiring multifamily investors. And he is accompanied by Ashley Wilson, who is the co-founder of Bar Down Investments, LLC. She is co-founder of not only Bar Down Investments, LLC, but how's it look? That's a really cute name. LLC, also co-host of the Passive Investing Show, best-selling author of The Only Woman in the Room, a book called The Only Woman in the Room, Knowledge and Inspiration from 20 Women Real Estate Investors. And she's a Bigger Pockets series host. She started investing in real estate in 2009, has been involved in over $100 million in transactions within both single and multifamily real estate across over 1,500 units. When Ashley is not working on her businesses, she enjoys spending time with her family, including her husband and their two daughters. Additionally, Ashley enjoys competing with her horses. Dayakara, is that right? And wow,
yes.
Those are great names. Wow. Well, you guys, welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Thanks so much for having us, Bill.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to have you guys on, and good to have you back, Jay. It's You know, when Jay first was on, he was a flipper, I believe, and probably one of the best ones out there doing, you know, amazing things. And he even hinted way back then, you know, I really think I want to get into multifamily. And well, it looks like you've done it, and you've done it in a big way here. So you and Ashley sound like you've got a lot of stuff going on. But yeah, maybe you can just kind of, you know, bring us up to date, and we can kind of move into, I think one of the areas we talked about off air here was the idea of, you know, how do you adjust your management in this current economy? We've talked a lot about the current economy and where we're going and what's happening. But Ashley is the one that really handles a lot of the management side. And that's key for any property. Without good management, you really don't have a good investment. So yeah, maybe you guys could just kind of, you know, give us a little rundown there.
Sure. I'm happy to start. So back in 2018, I think it was the first time I was on the show, and I was thinking about getting into multifamily for a number of reasons. And at the time, Ashley and I have known each other since about 2015. And at the time that I was looking to get into multifamily, I kind of went through my Rolodex and said, hey, who can I seek out that might be able to help me kind of break into this area and teach me and really help me get comfortable with multifamily. And I remembered Ashley. Ashley had been doing multifamily for a few years at this point. And I reached out to her and I basically said, look, I'm interested in learning this side of the business, this asset class. Would you be willing to kind of help me out? And I basically offered, hey, I'll make my time available, my knowledge available. I'll put in my effort, money, network, whatever it takes. And in return, I would just love if you could kind of teach me the business. And she jumped at that. I jumped at that. It just seemed like a great opportunity for both of us. And year or two later, we realized that we worked tremendously well together. Ashley is absolutely the best multifamily operator I've ever met. So I was honored that she was willing to help me out. And we just had a lot of really good complementary skills. And so in 2020, we ended up deciding to partner in Bar Down, the company that she started. And we're buying multifamily throughout the Southeast at these days. We currently own about 1,000 units in Texas. And yeah, the rest is history.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. First off, I got to say, though, you know, you're too young to use a Rolodex, you know? I mean, I love Rolodexes, you know? And it's like...
You might be surprised, Bill. I am your target audience right now.
Well, hey...
I hit 50 last year, so I am right there.
That's so funny. No, I love it. I love it when I hear somebody say, I went to my Rolodex. I go, oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Anyway, so that's how you guys got started. You're already up to like 1,000 units. This is pretty amazing. Now, when you mention operator, so she has been really involved on the syndication side, like before you did and was, you know, kind of handling that, and or was it more management of the actual properties?
So I was involved in the syndication side. So like Jay, I had a lot of prior experience with flipping. I started with single rentals. I did short-term rentals and long-term rentals, and then that transitioned into I started a flipping business with my father. That's the company House It Look. And we started on lower price point homes initially, but then transitioned into higher price point homes. But the takeaway really from that experience was my dad is a general contractor and he's had his own company for over 40 years. So he's worked on everything from residential to commercial. So I had a lot of exposure into construction in general. And after school, I actually went into corporate America and worked in the pharmaceutical industry in clinical R&D. So I worked on the Ambien team to start for Sanofi Aventis. I didn't work on Ambien, but I worked on that team. And we worked on different indications like major depression disorder, insomnia, schizophrenia. And then I transitioned to two other pharmaceutical companies, eventually landing at GlaxoSmithKline, where I ended up as the global director of project management for vaccine development. And all of that taught me how to manage from afar. So even when I worked at Sanofi Aventis, everyone I was working with, all my counterparts were remote. And then when I went to Wyeth, which is now Pfizer, the same setup. And then when I transitioned to GlaxoSmithKline, all of a sudden it was on a global stage. So I was contending with time zone and cultural changes between what we were doing in the U.S. versus what the rest of the world was doing. So that gave me a really good skill set coupled with my father's influence in construction and being able to manage from afar. So I transitioned into commercial real estate because an opportunity presented itself where a partnership group was under contract and one of the buildings at the apartment complex had burnt down to the ground and the seller did not want to do the renovation. They wanted to forward the proceeds from the insurance company to the buyer. Honestly, like most syndication groups at that time and even still present today, there wasn't someone on the team with any sort of construction experience or knowledge. So that severity of a situation really was daunting for that syndication company. So we partnered together and initially I was just to run the construction side of things, but it eventually transitioned into doing asset and construction management. So that was my first foray into multifamily ownership as a general partner. I partnered on another deal in a similar type of situation. I also consulted on several different properties for different ownership groups that were in distressed situations. And then I came to the realization that, you know, the asset manager ends up getting the reputation of however the project does, but really the underwriter is writing the playbook on how the asset manager is to execute. And if that playbook is not even feasible, the asset manager can't deliver. So that's when I decided to launch Bardot Investments. And then shortly thereafter, Jay and I started working together and we've built the company since then to what Jay and I both are very proud to have with a focus on operations and construction because Jay and I have such similar backgrounds. As he was alluding to earlier, we work very well together. We aren't the same person, but we definitely value the same ethics and morals and conduct of how we want to run our business and what we want to be known for. And then we have different skill sets and they're complementary. So it makes it enjoyable to work together.
That's great. Wow. What a background from pharma to, you know, to syndications and commercial real estate. I mean, that's quite a background. Very impressive. Looking at that, you know, that one, the first project that you did with, I mean, a total, you know, the burned down building. I don't know what was left, but, that you're talking not just rehab, you're talking about, I mean, major, is it almost like ground up construction, right?
It was ground up construction. So most people think of it and they say, oh, well, you know, it's probably like a little stove fire, but it wasn't. It was, I mean, we were down to the foundation. We didn't even have studs up when I took over and when we acquired the property. And the other thing we were contending with was there was a provision in the insurance policy and that carried over to our contract that we wouldn't be able to receive the insurance proceeds unless we had a CO by the end of the year, December 31st. So we purchased the property on July 9th. And if anyone knows anything about construction, to build an entire building from July to December is quite difficult. But I'm happy to report we were able to do it actually 2 weeks before December 31st. We got our CO and we did it under budget. So
wow.
I think that really, honestly, if I can toot my horn about one thing, I have to say that really put me on the map because I don't think a lot of people really knew the experience that I had firsthand. But once they saw that and, the actual delivery of everything, I think that's when everything really changed for me.
Was that a syndicated deal, you said?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you had to get investors to invest in this burnt down building, to what it was going to be. I mean, that had to be a little bit of a challenge, I would have thought.
Yes, but fortunately it was while we were under contract. It wasn't, it was something where the investors knew they were very familiar with the current situation, and it was one building. So it wasn't the entire property. I don't remember the building count on that property, but it was 124 units. And if memory serves me correctly, I think there were either 12 or 14 units that were completely gone. So I think it was 12 units. So they were going in knowing that we were down to 112 units to start. The lender knew, I mean, everyone knew it. Lender knew it, insurance company. But, we had everything lined up so that we were able to start work day one. One of the things, that I'm well versed on is obtaining permits and different townships ordinance. So one thing we were able to trigger quickly was to apply for the permits while we were under contract, which is municipality by municipality. Sometimes you can't do that. You have to actually have purchased the property before you can submit. Well, I identified that we could submit prior to that. So we actually got our permit prior to even closing. So we were able to start on day one. So little things like that and tricks, that makes a huge difference to being able to manage successfully.
Yeah.
And it's also a good, it's a good lesson for anybody that's listening to really playing to your strengths. So Ashley and I really, we focus our business on those things that we're already good at, as opposed to going out and trying to learn lots of new skills. So Ashley and I both have a lot of construction experience. Ashley worked for her father for a long time, who did development. I did flipping houses for a long time. Ashley and I both came from the corporate world and have a lot of management experience. And so for us, we like to play to those strengths. We built a business that is very tightly run from a management standpoint. And then we look for properties that kind of fit our wheelhouse, which is properties that need a lot of value add, properties that need a lot of renovation, whether it's burned down buildings or properties that need heavy management overhaul, or whether they need physical renovations, whatever it is, those are the things they are trying to acquire those skills. Nothing wrong with that, but there's a lot to be said for taking the skills that you already have and figuring out how to apply them to a problem that currently exists.
That's great. That's a perfect example of that. That's excellent. Now, these aren't really your typical value add deals, right? These are, it's distressed. It seems to be the key word here, whether it's, distressed in terms of the condition of a property or the management side of it. And that seems to me like, you would probably get some amazing numbers on ROI, after you finish what you're doing. I would think that these buildings would be, you could get them at a discount or some type. Is that true?
Yeah, I think that, there's been a huge change in the market in terms of what people were evaluating distressed assets historically versus today. So with less buyers in the buyer pool, the add-in cushion that we see today for upside on value add wasn't factored in. So they were really truly paying off of NOI and current NOI, in-place NOI, as opposed to pro forma NOI. We see a huge departure from that about probably around 2018, to be honest with you. 2018, there was a change where all of a sudden people started adding in and factoring in this upside potential and value add assets. And the reason behind that, for your listeners who aren't so familiar with why that is, with value add, there is still meat on the bone in terms of industry jargon. And that essentially means that the multifamily properties are primarily evaluated off of what's called the NOI approach, and that's your income minus your losses annualized. And historically, multifamily was just evaluated off of in-place NOI. So it was divided then by the trading cap rate in that market. But what we're seeing, you know, from 2018 onwards, as more people started to flood the multifamily market, that people were overpaying. You could categorize it that way, or you could say looking for the upside potential. So let's say the NOI today is 100,000, but you change out management, you do some renovations, and you could push it to 180,000 within 2 years' time to 3 years' time. People were underwriting that and then buying it off of performa NOI. So what the future could have. So essentially they were paying for the value, the greatest and best use for that property as opposed to what it was being used for today. So they were, that's why some people say it's overpaying, because that current owner wasn't producing that return, but there was that return that was able to be achieved. So that, I think, is, you know, part of the reason that multifamily has had such a run up over the past few years is people have looked at value add and packed in that upside potential, which in turn has compressed cap rates. So in fact, value adds were actually rewarded for poor operations, because then all of a sudden they had more upside.
Interesting.
And this is the struggle. This is the struggle that we see in this industry all the time. Buyers and sellers. Buyers want to pay what a property is worth today, and sellers want the buyer to pay what a property is going to be worth after they buy it and renovate it. Basically, the buyers see the potential and say, "I'm going to pay," knowing what the potential is, but I'm not going to pay for that potential having been achieved. The sellers want the price that's going to be achieved after that all that potential has been achieved. And so over the years, basically what we see is when we talk about buyers and sellers markets, basically what we're talking about is that negotiating range between the buyer's price and the seller's price. And over the years, that sort of flip-flops. For many years, up until about 2017, 2018, it was a buyer's market, and buyers were able to get the price, today's price. And then from 2018 to around beginning of 2022, it kind of flipped, and sellers had all the negotiating leverage. And so buyers were paying a lot closer to that price of what the property would be worth after the value add work was done. And now that we're in this crazy economy and things are starting to slow down and interest rates are going up and there's a whole lot fewer transactions going on, we're now kind of in a slow trend towards it moving to a buyer's market again, where likely over the next 6 to 12 months, what we're going to see is prices kind of coming back to that what things are worth today price, that buyer's price.
Now, being that your approach is very heavy construction related, you know, the cost of construction materials and so forth is definitely higher than it has been. And is that impacting your, you know, your numbers in terms of, you know, trying to put this together and still get a good spread there?
So the cost of construction has always fluctuated by market, depending on where the source of the materials are coming from. And in terms of just construction costs in general, it really breaks down to the materials and labor. So with respect to materials, when we look at the chain supply issues that we've all encountered over the past 2 years, that has stressed the price of overall renovations and construction, as we've all witnessed. Fortunately, that has been coming down. So that's been coming down for a plethora of reasons. One is because the chain supply issues are being sorted out. Two is because a lot of distributors actually over-ordered on supply. So that's forcing the cost of materials to come down exponentially faster than they would if they had just ordered regular supply, because now they have a surplus of inventory. And then the third reason is because alternative solutions are being innovated in construction. I think construction, we can all agree, is one of the less innovated, least innovated industries, probably of all the industries, not even real estate specific. So it's overdue for an upgrade. And we're seeing a lot of different innovations come with different sourcing materials and products and, you know, 3D printing of communities. That's been a huge innovation over the past couple of years. Repurposing of different products for housing use. So, for example, shipping containers, even changing existing products, let's say offices and repurposing, or hotels and doing conversion projects. So that I think is also helping pricing come down. But then we've also had a shortage of laborers at the same time. So shortage in the workforce and shortage of materials exponentially increases pricing. And as we're seeing now, those things are starting to cool off. So that's helped. But the problem that that specific situation created is it just magnified our housing shortage. So I know that NMHC and the NAA, so the National Multifamily Housing Council and the National Apartment Association, they just issued a report in September where we have a shortage of 600,000 housing units today. And the problem that we have is that during COVID, there was not only a federal stop on construction at one point, but then there was also kind of a self-mandated, you know, self-imposed one where people stopped applying for permits. And once again, it was for a plethora of reasons. One is because it was very difficult to build at the cost that the construction was being priced at, but more talked about, I guess, in the news is the instability of the debt markets. And when there's instability of the debt markets, there's also instability of the equity markets. So typically on large multifamily housing projects, most people who kind of tackle those big projects, not everyone, but by and large, are larger single check writers, family offices, private institutions, private equity groups, and they're very tied into the debt markets. So when they see the debt markets start to tighten, they tighten as well. So it's a pretty bad situation when both sources of capital are kind of tightening their wallets and not willing to keep pulling the trigger on new product, in part because they can't perform it out. What are the interest rates going to be 18 to 24 months out, and whether or not the projects will pencil. So that that problem, you know, everyone's talking about, well, there's more construction going on now. I think it's the second highest rate of multifamily housing construction is going on right now in history. But at the same time, how many of those projects are going to actually run full cycle, and how many of those projects were initiated when our interest rates were, you know, 3.5% or 3%, and that's what they perform it into their underwriting when they forecasted out their build. They're not going to be able to roll over into that debt when they get stabilized. So what's going to happen with those projects? I think, you know, we're going to see a lot of projects stop mid-projects. We're going to see a lot of auctions because the banks are not in the business of owning half-finished projects, and they're not in the business of owning real estate in general. So how's that going to look is something I think we all are waiting to see. But in the interim, we still then have a housing shortage issue. And right now, we don't have people pulling the trigger as much on new construction to offset the challenges that the people who pulled permits 2 years ago are facing.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds like it's getting complicated in so many ways, and you have so many factors in the economy. I mean, with inflation, recession, I mean, just you know, the supply chain, I mean, on and on, that's making it even more difficult for people on both ends of that. And that's the one thing I wanted to ask you too, is really what What shift or what changes have you made in your operations and management side of it to sort of respond to that or to, you know, offset that in your particular, you know, properties and portfolio?
So on a ground level, I actually just emailed yesterday our asset manager that next week we need to do an audit line item by line item of every single expense item and also the income, but expense item with the emphasis to see how can we get more creative with our expenses and what alternatives do we have to work with. So let's say, for example, your payroll. Payroll is creeping up. It's one of the larger operating expenses for folks. Maybe on, you know, larger properties and on larger portfolio, you can bring in virtual leasing to span multiple properties. So you have essentially a call center. You can do virtual touring. You can kind of spread that expense across multiple properties as opposed to having people on site. At the end of the day, you still need to have at least someone or two people to be able to handle some of these tours. But I know during COVID, one of the things that we did is we did self-guided tours. Well, why can't we go back to self-guided tours? That's something that we already have the infrastructure in place. And I always like to think of COVID as an accelerator event. So I think COVID showed us what is possible without so many human touches. Now, I think human touch is important in trying to convert a sale. I'm not trying to discount that. But at the end of the day, is someone really needed to tour, you know, a potential resident at your property, or can we go back to what we were doing during COVID? And perhaps that's more cost effective. Looking for alternative sources of materials, not always going with, you know, the tried and true way, but challenging the status quo on how we do operations to see if there are more efficient ways. That's one way we're tightening up. Another way we're tightening up is we're not letting impatience get to us. So what I mean by that is our underwriting has stayed very consistent. We haven't wavered in wanting to just chomp at the bit and get a deal. Everyone does. But I think the people who remain patient, stick to their guns with underwriting, are conservative in their assessments of what interest rates are going to look like, you know, in 3 to 5 years. If your business plan is to sell in 3 to 5 years, what are those interest rates going to look like? What are the cap rates going to look like? Maybe it's not the traditional 10 basis points per year held. Maybe you want to go with 15 basis points. But just looking at the data constantly, Jay and I always look at how the specific markets are performing, but we also compare that to the global or the national market as well. So we're looking at the global markets because that has an impact. We have a lot of foreign investors coming into the U.S., especially because we don't have any foreign tax today to curtail that. But, you know, that's something to keep an eye on because that keeps the markets pretty frothy, you know, especially in a very high inflationary market. So there are things we're looking at on a micro level, and there are things we look at on a macro level. Jay, did you want to add some of the things I probably forgot?
No, I think you hit on most of the things there. I think from my side of the business, and I mostly focus on the capital raising and the underwriting side, is I think it's important that all of these things are factored in early on in the project, actually before the project's purchased. So these are things that when doing the underwriting, when doing the due diligence, it's important to be doing sensitivity analysis. So looking at things like if inflation stays high, how is that going to impact the business plan? Versus if inflation comes down. If interest rates go up, how's that going to impact the business plan versus if interest rates stay the same or go down? If the cost of labor and materials goes up and down. How's that going to factor in? And so it's important when you're doing the underwriting, not just to make broad assumptions, but to make multiple assumptions and to model out the business plan and model out the deal using a set of assumptions as opposed to just one assumption or one set of assumptions, multiple sets of assumptions. Because at the end of the day, we don't know where things are headed. We don't know what's going to happen. I don't think anybody could have predicted that interest rates were going to go from 3% to 7% over the course of 4 months. But luckily, all the deals that we do, we model out what's the worst case scenario, and we ensure that we have risk mitigation plans. We have ways to mitigate some of these things that are happening in the market today that we likely wouldn't have had if we hadn't modeled that out when we were going through due diligence and underwriting at the beginning of the project. So in addition to what Ashley's saying, all the things that need to be done on the ground to deal with everything we're seeing, it's also important that you try and kind of head off a lot of those issues at the beginning, if possible, just by being careful and conservative in your underwriting.
What do you think distinguishes your company from so many others out there? My inbox is just packed from, you know, syndicators and folks that are, you know, struggling, you know, just trying to get their message out there. There seems to be sort of less, less opportunity out there for folks to, you know, to find good, you know, good deals. And yet, they're trying to keep it going. What distinguishes you folks in that, that jungle out there?
Well, I mean, I could say a lot of things. One of the things that we get feedback often from our investors about that they really like and helps them feel very comfortable. One of the reasons that Ashley and I got into multifamily in the first place was that we had a lot of cash on hand that we were looking for a home for. And we were investing with other syndicators, but at the end of the day, we're both control freaks, and we both think that we can do things better than most other investors out there. And so we got into multifamily for one of the main reasons was so that we'd have a place to put our cash where we'd also have some control over it. One of the things that our investors really like about the deals that we do is that we tend to put a lot of our own money in these deals. So we've done two deals this year, and the GP team, our partners, Ashley, myself, and our third partner, put in about $3 million in between those two deals this year. Just the fact that our interests are aligned with our investors because we have money on the passive side, on the LP side of all of our deals, that basically gives confidence to our investors that we really believe in the deal. If we didn't believe in the deal, we wouldn't put our own money in it. And if we weren't willing to put our own money in it, we wouldn't do a deal. And so for us, that's a great way to align incentives with our investors. Additionally, I think everybody in the industry that invests with us and that knows us kind of thinks of us as kind of I'm the old guy. Ashley's not old, but I've been around the block. I've been doing this for 15 years. Ashley's been doing this for close to 15 years. So we're not fly-by-night operators. We're not somebody that just started investing a couple years ago. But we also have a lot of corporate and management and background in other large businesses that really help and inform the way we run our own business. And so I think a lot of people just, they like working with us because we treat our business very seriously. We put our own money in projects. And it's really for us, this is just an extension of what we'd be doing on our own anyway, if we weren't taking other people's money.
That's excellent. Now, do you, you find property management in the areas you go into, or do you actually staff it yourself?
Yes. So we've been very lucky because my past experience has been not so good with property management companies. And then when I did that first deal that I was telling you about with the other partnership group, that property actually was in Texas as well. And we were working with someone at that time who was beyond excellent. And, kind of going aligned with the question you just asked that Jay answered on what separates us, we have an obsession of excellence. And this individual also has an obsession with being excellent in everything she does too. And she's a third generation within property management. She's not a property manager anymore, but she started a property management company with her mother, and their family is very, very well into multifamily. The father's a developer, second generational multifamily developer. So they have a lot of connections, a lot of knowledge, a lot of experience, and they're just incredible people to boot. So fortunately, we were able to work with them on our projects and have been very successful working with them. So, you know, when something works, you know, we look for ways to improve it, but it doesn't mean that we, you know, are looking for ways to replace them. We're very, very content with the level of, you know, excellence we want to achieve, not only on our investments, but with the investors, but we know that we do so by being a beacon in the community. So it's really important for us to integrate with local organizations and charitable groups. And we run a lot of social programs on our properties. It's really important to us. It aligns also with that company too. So it really comes down to when you work with people that are aligned with your mission as well, it's amazing how much can get done. And that's what we have found working with this group. But looking at other markets, we have worked with other local property management companies. It's kind of case by case dependent.
Sure. No, that's understandable. Wow. This is really great. It sounds like you have a fantastic organization going there. And have you closed or completed full cycle on any of your deals yet? Or the company still a little bit young for that?
We've gone full cycle on two deals. So one was the deal where the property burnt to the ground, and another one was a deal that we acquired in March of 2019. That was in Amarillo, Texas, 225 units, and that property did quite well as well.
Oh, that's great. 3 years. Wow. That's awesome. Wow. Well, is there anything, you're just kind of looking at this too, anything that I might have missed in terms of things that you know, you want to share with us today before we close out?
No, I would just recommend to all of your listeners that while the economy is crazy today, it's a very tumultuous time. We don't know where things are headed. But this is actually a fantastic opportunity for anybody that's looking to start their real estate investing career. Now's a great time to be doing things like building your network and getting educated and going out and finding people that you can potentially work with, whether it's partners or vendors or lenders or brokers. Now's a great time to really start preparing yourself, because I have a feeling that over the next 6 to 12 months, we're going to start to see a lot of good deals popping up. And it's going to be those people who are prepared that are going to be, quote unquote, lucky enough to get those deals. So I would encourage anybody that might be getting discouraged right now because the market's difficult, that now's not a time to just sit back and wait. Now's a great time to be learning and preparing and getting yourself in a position so that when the opportunities present themselves, you can jump on them.
Good advice. Good advice.
Yeah, to Jay's point, I always find that, first of all, with every market cycle, there is upside, and it's a matter of kind of timing the market and playing the current market cycle you're in, knowing which market cycle is coming next. So we're, you know, if you watch the news, we're in a recession or we're heading towards a recession. If you talk to people, I think people are pretty aligned with that kind of belief. But during recessions, multifamily properties tend to actually do well. And they do well for a host of reasons. They do well because of the fact that, you know, something we covered earlier today, which is the supply constraints on new starts. But then you also have demand surge. So you have people who otherwise would have been looking for a home. Maybe they're currently a renter and they were looking to purchase a home, and the affordability gap has kind of played its toll, and it has made them stick to renewing that lease and staying longer. In fact, in terms of renters staying longer, it's up 3.5% since last year. People are staying on average 57%. Historically, the national trend is 50%. That's what you use in underwriting as a guideline, that renters will renew 50% of the time. Well, currently it's at 57% of the time. So that's pretty high. And that's because of the situation that we're in. So the trickle down effect from that is that rents actually tend a lot, oftentimes can actually go up in a recession. And that's because, you know, you have the supply constraints coupled with the demand surge, and that creates an opportunity for owners to push rents a little bit more, because where else can someone go? So they kind of capitalize on that opportunity. And then by doing so, you're pushing then the evaluation of the property. So in terms of your NOI and what I was talking about earlier with the NOI being the determinant for evaluating the property, you're able to evaluate the property at a higher valuation. You're able to cash flow better. So those are all things that kind of play on the current market cycle we're in. I would, you know, everything that Jay said in terms of being cautious and educating yourself and being very knowledgeable, at the end of the day, people make the deal. So if there's an investment opportunity and the numbers look great, whatever time that you've spent examining the numbers, vet the team 10 times whatever time you spent vetting the numbers, because a team, an excellent team, can take a mediocre deal and make it a home run, grand slam, out of the park investment. But a mediocre team or a poor team can take a deal that is set to be a grand slam and be a complete and utter failure. So the team, from my personal experience, I'm sure I'm speaking with Jay on this. That's why it's so important to find the right partners. Finding the right investment opportunity starts with finding the right people. So I would highly recommend that everyone look for the right people as your first step. And then look at the market and market conditions. And then finally look at the returns, because the returns don't matter if the first two things aren't set and ready to go.
Right on, right on. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of folks listening that really want to find out more about you and your organization. And I understand, too, that Jay, you're coaching, too, right, with aspiring multifamily investors. So, I kind of like, you know, with your background in terms of really just your foresight in the economy and things that are happening there. And I'm sure adding that into your coaching should be invaluable for people. So how can people find out about you, connect with you, and not only find out about you and your deals, but coaching as well?
If you want to find out about our company is bardowninvestments.com. So you can go to bardowninvestments.com. Ashley and I are both on social media. I'll let her talk about hers, but you can find me as J. Scott Investor on all social media. You can connect with me at connectwithjscott.com. And if you want to find out more about our coaching program, it's called Apartment Addicts. And we basically help those who are interested in doing multifamily, whether it's a 20 unit deal or a 50 unit deal, or doing the big 150, 200, 500 unit deals that we're doing. Our program, I think, is fantastic. We've had a ton of successful students over the past couple of years. So you can go to apartmentaddicts.com to learn about that. Ashley?
You can follow me at Bad Ash Investor, but ditto on everything Jay just said, because he said it perfectly.
That's great. Do you have something you called, you know, apartment a rehab? You know, I'm kind of moving into that area here.
We've got addicts, and we can move into rehab as well.
Okay, great. Well, guys, I cannot thank you enough for being on. It's been great talking to you, Jay, again. It's great meeting you, Ashley. Gee whiz, you know, you're a power team here. You guys are going to do great.
Appreciate it, and congrats to you on your upcoming big milestone.
Yeah, thank you very much. I also want to thank all our old dog listeners out there, too, for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we greatly appreciate it. Please note, everything presented here by Jay and Ashley can be accessed in our detailed show notes, including any kind of links and so forth, at the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And you're going to look for the episode with Jay Scott and Ashley Wilson. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward. And may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.